Hello, I am Christian Wolf, and it's great to welcome you to a very special podcast from The Cynic, available to both our subscribers on thecynic.co and our free podcast feed. The reason we are making it available to everyone is that this is a topic we feel is important and hopefully interesting to all Celtic fans. We're going to have a look at how a supporters board is being set up at Liverpool Football Club, which is a formal legal agreement between the club and fans, which even includes mechanism that would require the supporters board to give consent to major changes at the club. And we're going to discuss whether such a supporters board model can be adopted for Celtic and whether it could be the one thing that a large part of the fan base can unite behind and work towards as part of a wider organization of Celtic fans. On the panel today, we have some very special guests to help us give more information about the model being set up at Liverpool and how we could apply it to Celtic. But we also have one other cynic with me. It's very much the foreman or the unofficial Cynic Contributors Union, Christopher Samani. How are you, mate?
I'm well, mate. Thanks for inviting me on to this tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
Obviously, you bring your credentials as a man of the people, as the big star of our weekly Free Cynic podcast. But you also have a long experience with trade unions, organizing a workforce, and going into negotiations and consultation with management of large organizations.
Yeah, I've been doing that for quite some time now. More recently, that's been really what I've done. So it'll be interesting to see if I can provide any insight to this. Probably not. You've probably invited me on and I'll be silent in the background, but any sort of parallels, I'll be happy to talk about them, mate.
At least you'll have a reasonable host this time.
Yeah, indeed, Ty. A bit of professionalism tonight. Yes. It's always good, mate.
We'll see. Off to a good start. A returning guest, I think this is his third time on the Cynic. He's becoming a regular. It's our good friend, Martin Gemmell from Celtic Shared. How are you, mate?
How are you doing, mate? Thank you for having us on. Yeah, third, is, I think, is the correct number. Pleasure to be here, so looking forward to it.
We'll see. Martin, obviously you've been on before, but a very quick introduction to yourself and your work with Celtic Shared, if you don't mind.
So I am one of the founding members of Celtic Shared. We have been, I'm going to talk about Celtic Shared in more detail, but we've been around, I think, about 10 months or so. I've been involved with fan groups since pretty much my late teens, whether that be Green Brigade.
A couple of years, yeah.
I've always been a member of the Celtic Trust as well. Not been a member of the committee or anything like that, but I've always kind of supported the Celtic Trust from afar and contributed where I can. A lot of cross membership and pretty experienced and sort of all things fan groups.
Excellent. And also a returning guest, and whose appearance on one of our other podcasts at the end of 2020, yes, garnered some really great feedback from listeners. He is the chair of Liverpool Supporters Union Spirit of Chankly. It's Joe Blott. Joe, welcome back.
What an introduction. Hi, everyone. Great to be back in, speaking with yourselves, and hopefully with some further news from way back in 2020, where we started this journey.
It's been an eventful year. 13 months since you were on the last time, and we'll cover a lot of what has happened since then, Joe. But for our listeners who maybe didn't hear you the last time, could you give us a very brief overview of the history of Spirit of Shankly and your role in it?
Yeah, Spirit of Shankly started life just over 13 years ago now, and really in response to previous owners and the ramshackle way that they were running the football club. Took us to near bankruptcy, if you recall. And this was the supporter response, really, to challenge that, to mobilise fans, to really get fan activism as a major force for change, really, within the football club. Culminated as well, really, with I think there was around that time there was a lot of issues around football in general anyway, and I think the model that we chose was as a supporters trust, but more as a union as well, which is interesting listening to Chris earlier, given his kind of negotiation union background. It was kind of our feel as well, is that it needed to be more focused on some of the politics as well, not necessarily national, but certainly the politics of football in particular, where I think some trusts of necessity shy away from. I think that was something that we felt that we needed to keep a grip on. Own personally, yeah, I've been a member since just after it started, but I certainly wasn't one of the creators of it, and I've got, you know, massive respect for everyone who's been there before me and got us to this position, because this is a 13-year journey really to get to where we are now. And, you know, I've been chair for the last two and a bit, nearly 3 years. And yeah, I'm reaping the benefits of all the graft that people did back in the early days, because without that real grassroots challenge to the football club, to the owners, to football in general, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation now in the spirit of making progress. And I think, you know, it's great to be here, and I'm more than happy to share my views and where we are with you all, and hopefully it'll have some impact and some support. And I'm also keen to hear where Celtic are at as well, because there might be stuff we can still learn.
It was really fascinating to talk to you 13 months ago. And I think at that point, you know, there was a lot of people going on Celtic as well, almost as usual behind the scenes. But since December 2020, you said fairly good place, really consultation between you and the club. And then in April, the Super League breakaway happens, and you know, Liverpool is a participant to that. They very quickly back down, a very public apology from the owners. And in terms of spirit of Shankly's reaction to all this, just the Super League in itself, but also what I can maybe imagine seemed like almost like a betrayal from the club. How was that for you as a group? And is that kind of the catalyst that has led now to the supporters board?
It was. I mean, clearly, as I said, all of the work that had gone on for the what would have been like 11 years before that had been continuous catalysts, really. I think you're quite right that, you know, our engagement with Liverpool Football Club was amongst the best, certainly in the Premier League, and would certainly say it was way better than many other clubs. I think what struck me more than anything else on that horrible Sunday back in April was actually the unity that football fans showed more than anything else. So, you know, the big six or alleged big six were the ones who were wanting to make the breakaway league, but actually it was the big six fan groups who came together, really. And it, you know, in another life, you could actually see that the big six fan groups would actually get together and say, well, we want to go on a journey to join a Super League because it's in our best interest, because we'll get the best players and everything else. But no, there was absolute solidarity in pulling that together. And within an hour of the news breaking, we were active. And I think that's the bit that many non-activists don't see, really, is that, you know, we talk to each other. We might be foes on the pitch for 90 minutes twice a season. But for the rest of the time, there's more that binds us together than divides us. And I think that shows strength. I think shocked football, to be honest with you. I think that's why, you know, it collapsed by like a pack of cards, you know, within 48 hours, really. And I think, you know, that strength of feeling is it shows what a force to be reckoned with football fans can be. And so I'm glad that we, as a union, played our part in that, but certainly, you know, reflect and recognise the others within it. And if I can just say one other point as well on that, one of the biggest supporters and allies to that was our colleagues at Everton, the Blue Union. Now they weren't kind of in the big six, but they understood the principle and they got right behind us, and, you know, we're fantastic in that. And I think again that solidarity amongst football fans is probably stronger than clearly what the Premier League were, because they had a faction of six and 14.
Joe, as we talked about last time, your relationship with Liverpool Football Club and owners, you know, FSG, who's, you know, a big venture fund in the US, based in the US. And it was kind of had a pattern where the relationship was pretty good, but then suddenly they would come up with something pretty stupid and they would back down within a certain amount of time, and it kind of happened again. But at your AGM, the Spirit of Shankly AGM in November, what came kind of out from that and was kind of picked up quite publicly as well was that you'd gone into back into talks with the club, and the negotiations around that resulted in what's called a supporters board. And we'll dig a little bit more into the detail of what a supporters board is, but what was the kind of main reasons for you as a union adopting that? And was there any misgivings about going into this more formal relationship with the club?
Yeah, I mean, clearly we wanted a stronger voice. And as you said, you know, the owners had really flip-flopped from one bad decision to another. And each time they'd had to back down and make a public apology. And we said to them, look, you've got to stop doing this now, because we're actually collectively together on this. We actually want the same ends. You're the custodians of our football club. You want the best players on the pitch. We want the best players on the pitch. The best way to do that is actually to work in partnership and work in harmony. Now, the risk of that is that you can become too close to the club and actually almost become part of the club fabric. And we were absolutely adamant that we weren't going to do that, that we were going to still retain our independence. And the other groups who joined, and I'll go into detail in the supporters board, but the other groups who've joined us, it's important for them to be saying their independence as well. And the club do recognise that, to be fair. But it was how we could really put a stop to the decisions that, you know, that we're putting an existential risk on our football club. So, you know, a ground move, a ground share, a breakaway league. And we just said, look, there has to be a line drawn here, that there has to be, you know, a way of getting around this without us being part of the fabric of the club. And, you know, in an ideal world, going back many years, you know, being a board member of Liverpool Football Club, you know, probably would have been a good thing. But, you know, we're not naive enough or stupid to think that, you know, it's a different sphere of game now. And, you know, sitting on a board with FSG, with a voice on behalf of supporters, your first responsibility is to that board. And therefore, you know, as soon as you sell your major player or make a financial decision not to buy players or whatever else it is, suddenly, even though you voted against it, you're part of that decision-making process. That's unfair on any fan. So we didn't want that. And to be fair, the club absolutely got it. And really wanted to get a workaround on it. And I think that's what we've got now. I think we've got a model that gives us a supporter voice, not just to be listened to, but also to be heard. We're not part of the fabric of the club. We can still challenge the club and hold it to account, which is what one of our jobs and duties is, as the name Supporters Trust. But the other element of this is that it's going to be written into the Articles of Association of Liverpool, which, you know, doesn't belong to FSG. It belongs to Liverpool. So if there's a transfer in the future of ownership, then clearly the articles transferred as well. So we're part of that transfer of undertaking. So not only do we think that we've, you know, maintained our independence, stopped the silliness of now, but also stopped the silliness of the future. So hopefully we've got a legacy of this for not only, you know, the fans who are coming through this now, but also their sons, their daughters, for the future. And one final thing to say is that I think one of the big pluses in all of this is that women's football in Liverpool hadn't been great. They'd actually been champions 3 years ago and then got relegated and really didn't have any support whatsoever. Because of this, their status is actually matched 100% with the men's game as well. So, you know, it's a huge, huge uplift in terms of not only for women's football, but also in the way that the supporters of women's football are as well. I'm trying to guess the notion of, you know, one supporter, one club, really.
So I will let Martin Samarni come in at some point. I do promise that. But No. It's more about me, Joe. Don't worry. So on your website, there's a lot of information about the supporters board, and, you know, preparation for this, we've been going through some of the slides for your from your AGM in November. You know, that's, you can go on and you can have a proper overview of how that works in terms of the specific details. And I think that's, I'd recommend anybody listening to go and do that. We'll put a link out on Twitter after this as well. But Joe, kind of before we kind of dwell further into this, in short, what is the supporters board and how is it going to work?
I think the major difference on the supporters board from just, you know, everyday dealings with the club is it's about strategy. So it's about developing, you know, 1, 2, 3 year plans with the club, not only for the club in terms of giving them direction, but also for fans as well. You know, I think a classic situation is we just reached a League Cup final for the first time for 6 years, and we've got the same problem in terms of ticket allocation. You know, who gets it? We've got 22,000, etc., and it's going to be divided up amongst the fans. We haven't really got a ticketing strategy. We've got day-to-day issues that we manage through ticket management, and you know, the club are good definitely now in terms of coming to us to say, what about the pricing for the Shrewsbury game? What about the pricing for the Cardiff game or whatever else it might be? So we, you know, that's really good in terms of how we can do that. We can influence, you know, prices of kids' tickets and stuff like that. But we haven't got a strategic plan. And we need to have that. We need to have a strategic plan about how season ticket holders are dealt with, how members are dealt with, how away tickets are dealt with, and formulate that so that everyone knows what's going to happen next year, the year after, and the year after that. And that's what we can do now as a supporters board. So there's going to be 16 members of the supporters board, but of that there are actually 7 groups of Liverpool representatives. So there's ourselves, the Liverpool Disabled Supporters Association, COPADS, who look after our LGBT plus groups, faith and ethnicity groups, the women's team, as I mentioned before, and Spire and COP 1906, who really do all of the day-to-day flag management, but importantly are actually the younger groups of this, and also the official Liverpool supporters committees who are worldwide. So we've got, you know, a huge representative base now, and as I say, it's more strategy than day-to-day management. The day-to-day stuff about, as I say, ticket pricing or some issues that about someone getting access to the ground, they'll continue to have conversations with us as the union of the supporters trust. But what this does is actually put us in a separate field now where we can actually influence the whole direction of the football club.
Martin, I think we're going to look really much a little bit in detail about why we think the supporters board is a good solution, why it gives a bit more teeth than just a fan forum. But overall for you, having been so involved in Celtic fan organisations for so long, sounds pretty good.
Yeah, no, listen, absolutely. First, congratulations to the guys at Liverpool. What they've achieved in that space of time has been incredible, and it's certainly to be envied, I would suggest. There has been attempts to get something similar at Celtic before, and I know we'll go on and discuss that further down the line, and I believe there's still kind of discussions happening now between fan organisations about a proposed similar set up to what Liverpool have got going on. But there's a couple of kind of questions that immediately sort of jump out to me, both from what you said there, Joe, but also from sort of looking on the reports at the time and on the website and all that kind of stuff, and kind of potential issues that I could see arising if, or hopefully when, we do get to implement something similar as a Celtic support. The first kind of probably most obvious one that jumps out that probably other listeners are listening to as well was who sort of decided who was getting on the board and how the sort of makeup of that board would look. So I know you said there was 16 people on it, but understand the spirit of Shankly make up the majority of that. Who decided that? And also, did that put any sort of supporters groups or maybe even sort of prominent individuals within the support, did that kind of maybe put noses out of joint? And if so, how did you deal with that?
Coming to your latter point, I'm not aware anyone was concerned about that, what we'd agreed. In fact, it you know, progress has been fantastic with the supporters groups, really. I suppose one of the issues that we are kind of addressing is that some of the groups are not necessarily led in the same way as a supporters trust or a union. So thinking of the official Liverpool supporters committees, for example, you can actually set up an official Liverpool supporters committee, you know, in Tenerife if you wanted to. And you only need, you know, sort of 6 or 7 of you to join together. And it gives you access to, you know, the club websites in it, behind the scenes and all those kind of things. They're not actually acting on behalf of anybody. So when you pull all those together around the world, there isn't kind of an umbrella. There isn't one single individual who pulls them together. So trying to get a kind of democratic solution to that is probably a more difficult one, one for them to address, really, because they've got one member on that committee that they need to choose from. Now, there are certainly a number of voices out there, but they just need to choose who that is. For some of the other groups, it's actually quite easy. So for cop-outs, the LGBT plus group, you know, it's kind of structured in a democratic way. So, you know, they had a meeting last week and decided who their representative was going to be, and they'll join the board. And in terms of the composition of the board, quite lucky at Liverpool, really, that really people galvanised behind Spirit of Shankly. For the most part, and we're lucky with that, really, because I know the likes of Man United have got 4, 5, 6 different groups who all have got a stake in terms of doing stuff. Whilst the other groups, from our perspective, we've kind of worked hand in hand. So in terms of the Disabled Support Association, it's kind of we work in tandem with them, as opposed to, you know, taking anything on that would be of an issue for a disabled fan or groups of disabled fans. We'd get behind LDSA, support them. So we've kind of always had a bit of a collegiate approach anyway. So it's actually made it quite smooth and quite easy. As I say, the only difficult bit have been a tactical bit of the democratic process to get people on there. And then obviously, as the supporters board develops, there'll be a code of conduct about people, the way, you know, business is done, etc., but not insurmountable. So no, in short, it's been welcomed by everyone, really. And you know, that gives us confidence that going forward, it's gonna work.
So I'm quite friendly with a number of the boys who go sort of home and away with Liverpool, so I kind of know the fan scene there quite well, and I know generally speaking they are quite a, you know, a united support on most, if not all, issues. Are you worried that perhaps there might come a time where there would be different opinions on that board to the point that it would cause, you know, potential splits, or where people might not show solidarity with where, you know, Spirit of Shankly are heading, and how would that be dealt with? Because I think I can see, you know, potentially arising at Celtic, where there's such a broad view and broad opinions on so many issues. I think we disagree, and I'm sure the guys agree. I think Celtic fans could, you know, cause a fight in an empty room at times. Whereas I think Liverpool broadly seem quite united in a number of issues. But if it were to come to, you know, a potential decision whereby, you know, there's maybe sort of 50-50 splits and whatever, how would you kind of deal with that?
I mean, you're right. You know, listen, I mean, certainly, you know, like that when we were setting this up, I know, you know, a number of fans said, you know, Spirit of Shankly don't represent me. I'm a season ticket holder. You haven't got any rights to. I'm not a member, so be it. And what we're saying is that, well, actually, you know, if you join Spirit of Shankly or Cop-Outs or LDSA, then actually your voice will be heard, and it'll be heard a lot louder than it will be as kind of just a fan, if there's such a thing. So you know, a part of this is about a membership drive as well, really, to get people on board. Now, in terms of tensions that will, you know, undoubtedly will emerge, you're right, Martin. You know, we can't assume that everything's going to be great for the next 5 years. There will be. I guess that's how any, you know, hopefully then mature group gets together. If there are insurmountable issues, then it would be a vote, and it would. There's the two things then, isn't it? Do Spirit of Shankly have a whip that gets the 10 people to vote against the 6? If that's what it was. No, I don't think so. I think what we'd be having is, you know, it's a one person, one vote. You'd be given a free vote, really. There wouldn't be, you know, something mandated that had to follow a certain route, unless it was so obvious that it was, you know, that the union had to make a particular stance over something. So we would call on its majority. But I'm hoping we never get to that. I'm hoping that, you know, that we have a 16 majority for everything that we do. But you're right, you know, there will be voices. And I think part of it is that's healthy. Mm-hmm. We want that level of challenge. We want that level of difference. We want that level of opportunity to push things forward and not do things that we've always done in a certain way because it's satisfactory. So change and challenge is something that I think this will bring, to be quite honest with you. And hopefully what it means as well. I think it's on the website, I'm not too sure, but underneath the supporters board are a number of fan forums as well, which will look at kind of the tactical issues. So they've been led by the club, but they're still issued, but they'll still look at those. What that means is that more people can actually join those fan forums to have a voice as well. And what their kind of work plan is to feed into the supporters board. So we're getting a lot of grief from them who are saying, you know, X, Y, and Z isn't happening. That's rich stuff for us. You know, the hopper of the supporters board will be amazing because we'll be directing them to do work, but equally they'll be coming to us with issues that need to be resolved and taken forward. So, yeah, listen, again, you know, I'm not naive to think that there won't be some hurdles to get over. But I think certainly at the outset, you know, we're confident that we've got seven groups who ultimately want the very best for every Liverpool fan. But you know, that's not always easy. But we'll get over that.
So, when looking at the plans and the model when it came out, Joe. So, Samani, obviously you've been a member of, you know, unionized. I've done staff council representations in a non-unionized session. I think I'll let you come in, Samani, but I think we both agree that the negotiations and discussions with management or organization, the balance of power only really changes, or you have a lot more clout when you have some sort of big levers to pull, like a veto, or in, you know, a sense, you know, the ability to go on strike. And what struck me with this supporters board model, Samani, and we'll come into the detail what it involves, but it is that this supporters board seems to have a lot more clout than any sort of fan forum I've ever seen before.
Yeah. I think I'd taken down some notes when Joe was talking there, and you're absolutely right. I mean, some of the issues and some of the points that you raised are similar to organising within a trade union. I mean, and one of the key points you're talking about there is democracy and legitimacy. So democracy is really important. You hit the nail on the head there, Joe. These things are going to happen, and that's healthy, because if there's no democratic lever to replace, I was going to say you, I imagine you're doing a great job, Joe, but, you know, later, further down the line, you know, the legitimacy of the group will go if you can't be replaced. If you're not seen to be holding anybody to account, then the legitimacy of the group continue to regress. So some of that tension that's in there that Martin talks about, and I would concur, we probably would get that at Celtic, but that's good. Yeah. And I think there's still going to be common threads and common themes that will go through that the vast majority of the support can gather around. And, I'm sure we'll come on and talk about it. Some of the things in your motion, the motion from your AGM, Joe, were really interesting, and we'll come and talk about that. But if there's that legitimacy there, that tension's there, there's broad consensus on issues, the board are going to listen because they know that the support will vote in whatever way, you know, with their wallets, with their feet in certain issues, you know, if they're big. And that's really what's key to it. And I can see that it's a juggling act, isn't it? Because you want consistency and you want things to be taken forward, but at the same time, you don't want to get too comfortable. You want that a wee bit of tension there so that things can progress, otherwise it becomes stagnant. And as Christian was saying, if you've got levers there, that lever is a broadly kind of agreeable support that are behind you. They know that when you're talking to them, you're talking for them. If that's not there, then it becomes a bit more wishy-washy. And that's a constant battle. You need to kind of keep renewing that. Otherwise, again, legitimacy disappears. And I think that's always the key thing here. Again, another point that you made, you can't seem too cosy. You can't seem too close because people will immediately think, what's the point? So it's a continuous battle, you know, but it's really, really interesting in some of this. And Martin will talk more about the supporters group, but if this could be replicated at Celtic, you know, it would be a huge positive.
And the one key here, Joe, Simon's absolutely right about that. Having a lever to elect the people who represent the fans and having a healthy discussion. But what I think makes the supporters board at Liverpool so crucial is that a lot of people are suspicious of the word consultation and people saying, we'll come and discuss with you and we'll have a healthy discussion about it, unless you have a power at the end. And the interesting thing with the supporters board is that you essentially have three levels of engagement. And the top one is what you've been called consent. So essentially, at the moment, there is two issues that under the supporters board, the club cannot make a decision unless it has the agreement of the supporters board. And that is, one, a permanent move away from Anfield as, you know, the home venue of LFC's first team, a permanent proposed grand share at Anfield. And also the second one, where I can see as a direct link to the Super League scandal, is that the fan supporters board would have to consent to the men's and women's first team permanently participating in an alternate breakaway domestic league or European football competition. There's other things in engagement, you know, around consult. You need to be consulted on changes to the crest, match day arrangements, tickets, you know, fixtures away, stadium issues, and so on. And also engaged, whereas a level of engagement, you just have to be informed. But it's this consent one where you, even though you don't own a single share of the club, you're not on the board, you as a supporters group can say, no, we are not joining a European Super League. And the club has to follow that. So that for me is a major achievement for a supporters group to have, especially at such a global club as Liverpool.
Yeah, definitely, man. You're right. You certainly done your homework. You just reminded me of some of the things that we've got agreements on. So thanks for that. Everyone wanted some kind of veto. That's what any football fan would really want in terms of, particularly in a global market that we all work in terms of, you know, the philanthropic owner has long gone, really. So there has to be something that just stops the full market economy of football. And that's got to be through fans. So having this consent or veto was critically important to us. And again, it's probably one of those, isn't it? Because we challenged Liverpool Football Club all the way back and start off with the history of Hicks and Gillette, the previous owners. Not long after FSG took over, who saw Spirit of Shankly as their great allies, because, you know, we kind of got rid of Hicks and Gillette and they were able to walk in. They then wanted to up the prices to £77 a ticket because they saw that there was a money to be made out of selling seats at Anfield, because like Celtic, it's sold out every week. So why not milk it as far as you can? And we said no, and, you know, I don't think they believed that we would say no. And then we continued through that, and you mentioned, you know, some of the decisions that they'd taken kind of randomly, around trademarking, the furlough and the staff last year and stuff like that, where we challenged them and got them to lose. So I think they realised that actually, you know, they've kind of got the consent anyway, because they're just challenges on those sorts of big issues anyway. And what, you know, what we're saying is that you can work with us on these, because after a democratic mandate, I mean, we can say no to a breakaway league, for argument's sake. But what if the whole of the Liverpool fan base said, we actually do want to join that breakaway league because it's the only way we're going to get, you know, top class elite players on our football pitch? Well, at least it's democratically chosen. It's not, just Joe Bloss of Spiracy Shankly said, no, you're not. You know, it can work positively for the club as well if they kind of get it right. So it's within their interest to do it. And I think the second thing is about it, so I don't want to labour it, but for me, football is just so complicated now, isn't it? You know, FSG is based in Boston. They've got fingers in all sorts of different pies. Their board is around 72 people, if I'm not mistaken. A supporter's voice is never going to be heard around that. Then beneath that, there's the FSG Liverpool board, which again is, you know, Boston based. And then beneath that is representatives of the board based here in Liverpool. Now, that's complicated. Now, if you've got a majority shareholder like we have, who suddenly decides that, you know, actually, you know, it's a great idea to trademark Liverpool, he probably said that after having a night out, you know, just decided it upon himself because he's the majority shareholder. Now, for the local people here, that might have caused, you know, absolute horror to think, well, how can you do that? You know, a lot of them not only are employed by Liverpool, but actually live in Liverpool and are from Liverpool. Do they want their city trademarked? You know, probably not. So this gives them, I think, a little bit of comfort locally about how working together with fans, they can't be dragged down a street that they don't want to go to either, or at least if they do want to go down, it actually means there's got to be talked about first. Whereas at this moment in time, or prior to this, you know, it was very much someone could just make a random decision in Boston and we'd all have to try and live with it. And actually it was the fans who railed against it as opposed to the club itself. And I think there's a benefit here, I think, for it. And I think the final thing to say on it, I think we've also got within the Engage and Consult some very important points, I think, that others haven't. So sponsorship, it's not quite in consent yet. But it's very much an Engage, but it's not just about, we're just going to engage with you to tell you who the next shared sponsors are. There's actually a conversation being had, and it's already started, about the principles of what good sponsorship is. So, you know, is it okay to have, a cryptocurrency on the front of your shirt, or a betting company, or a Saudi state or whatever else it is. Now, we can't stop them from doing that, because if they need to generate the income to get the players on the pitch, then they're going to make a business decision. However, the principles are actually going to be there. So coming back to your point, Chris, in terms of having, you know, not only a democratic approach, but also a unionized stroke, you know, social approach to football is, again, incredibly important. And I think if there's a similarity for me with Celtic and Liverpool, you know, the value base of those two clubs are very, very strong indeed. So, you know, could you have the same conversation with one of the London clubs? Perhaps not. I know a lot of the fans would want it, but just the way they run is very, very different. But, you know, I think we're able to seize and capitalise on the values that we've got. And, you know, Liverpool market them on the back of it, you know, this means more than, you know, obviously they use your never walk alone and they use the Liverpool way and all those kind of things. But you can't turn those values on or off. And that's what we said to them. If you've got these values and you're marketing them, you can't just decide tomorrow that you're not going to live by them, because fans live by them. And again, very much, you know, Celtic fans will, I'm sure, feel the same way about their club.
It sounds very familiar, Joe. And to turn to the Celtic side, Martin. Obviously, first of all, there has been attempts at more formalised fan engagement and forums at Celtic. You know, there is unofficial, dialogue between the club and different groups, but there are also the fan forum at Celtic is still in operation. What was that supposed to be, and what is it now? What has it turned into, you think?
So the fans forum was first proposed at an EGM, I don't even remember the year, to be honest, a good number of years ago. And as usual, as most, if not all, resolutions that are proposed by the Trust or other fans at EGMs, was voted down by the Celtic board, who then came back a year later with their own tailored idea of something that looked very similar to what was proposed the year before. Essentially, what Celtic board don't want to do is lend credibility to the fans and particularly the trust. So they came back with this other fans forum idea and passed that at the following AGM. The club kind of deliberately butchered the idea, because what the initial idea was for a group of elected fan representatives to meet on scheduled monthly meetings with the board to discuss the kind of big ticket, you know, stuff that was going on at that time. And what it became was essentially an extension of the Q&A at what the AGM would be, where it would be pretty much a free-for-all, where fans would have the microphone to ask a question, the question would get answered, and they'd get sat back down to their seat. So that's no any way, any idea of sort of proper engagement. And actually what it did was it actually became a hurdle for proper fan engagement, because the club then actually then pointed to the fans forum and used that as an example, as them speaking with the fans, when in actual fact there was no consultation. It was essentially them making a decision and telling fans what the decision was and maybe getting asked a few questions about it. And a lot of this stuff was kind of, a lot of stuff that was coming up at fans forum was kind of sort of low level stuff, you know, things like, you know, catering, you know, stuff about resolution 12, stuff about, you know, car parting, bus parting, you know, time taking to get to a bus part, all that kind of stuff. And listen, that stuff's got its place, and the fans forum's actually got its place for that kind of stuff. But actually, for kind of more strategic, long-term stuff that fans should have a say in, it's absolutely of no use whatsoever. And it's in no way can it be classed as sort of fan engagement.
And Martin, Celtic Shared In, which you are now active in. Before we kind of, I want to get some Marnie's kind of points on what the fan organisation in Celtic is and what it is, but Celtic Shared specifically, what is it and what are you trying to achieve at the moment?
So it's essentially it's a collection of fans. It's still sort of driven by Green Brigade members with input from others. We've had some really good input from, you know, individual Celtic supporters. We've had good input from other fan groups, such as the Boys and the Trust. We've had good input from, you know, fan media like yourselves. But still mainly being driven by the same people that launched it. We don't have an official membership or democratic structure as yet, but that will change imminently, because for it to have any credibility, it's going to need that. But we're still very much in our infancy. I don't want to be running it forever. The boys and the group don't want to be running it forever, nor should we, because, like I say, it then loses credibility. I'd like it to be a union of fans similar to kind of Spirit of Shankly. The Trust are kind of, they kind of call themselves a union of fans, you know, a fan union as well. But the Trust are, we want to be kind of more agile in the likes of the Trust. The Trust have got to work within the parameters of their constitution, which, you know, they spent a huge amount of time setting up is absolutely invaluable to them and how they operate. But it means that because of the way they're set up, they're very rigid, and it's sometimes difficult for them to react to, you know, the ever-changing circumstances that can arise at a club like Celtic and the fans, you know, every day, every week. I'd eventually like it to have sort of dedicated signed-up members that would include various CSCs, other fan groups, other fan media, an elected committee, elected representatives that will cover across that, so that essentially fans will have a sort of louder voice at Celtic. Historically, we've had sort of five main organisations, six now if you include the emergence of the Boys, but all six have kind of always had their own sort of their own agenda, their own core activity. So if you think of sort of the Green Brigade and the Boys, their sort of core activity is inside the stadium. It's supporting their team in a unique way, adding colour, adding voice to the team. Obviously, there's more to them than that, but that's the kind of core principle when you think Green Brigade of the Boys. You think of like the CSA and the affiliation and the Irish Association, the main core principle, the main core activity for them is to get fans to stadiums. It's also more difficult in terms of logistics of travel for the Irish Association, but that's what you think of it. And the idea of Celtic Shared is having these, you know, large organisations with, you know, massive influence and having them all kind of under the one umbrella, like a Spirit of Shankly, like a union. So these people can all still, all these groups can still all do their thing, but Celtic Shared can come at it for a more kind of strategic one core voice, giving the fans a sort of louder voice and running in the club. In terms of goals and aims, I sort of break it down kind of short term, medium term, long term. So short term, like I said, it's to facilitate fan engagement and kind of force what would be external pressure on Celtic to kind of unite the fan base and issues that matter, and to act as a union for any fan issues that might arise. Because we've got some, you know, really experienced, knowledgeable people who can lend an ear to maybe fans who've got themselves in a difficult position with the club or the police or the government or whatever. We've got, you know, we've got people who are very well versed and sort of advising fans and come to a good outcome. Sort of medium term, I think there's a bit of an education piece around the whole sort of share stuff at Celtic, and I think that that's something that needs to be worked on in terms of educating particularly younger fans on why it's important to have that power within the club. In 10 years' time, we might be faced with a situation where, you know, Dermot Desmond might leave. The guy's 70 years old and he might leave. And there's only two things that can happen when that happens. Dermot leaves and he gives his shares over to his boy, and we're all of a sudden a family dynasty. And we've all seen, you know, what happened in the 90s when that happened. Or he sells to the highest bidder and we're extremely open to a hostile takeover. And, you know, Lord knows who that could be. That could be some billionaire, Saudi billionaire who has no emotional attachment to Celtic. It could be our very own Craig White scenario. So for me, these conversations have got to start now. And that is kind of a medium-term aim, is to try and educate a lot of the supporters, and like I say, particularly the young supporters, on the importance of that. Because like I said, this is a very real scenario that could happen, you know, in the next decade quite easily. And long term, and I know we might try and discuss this, and I know it's kind of similar to what Joe and the guys at Spirit of Shankly do, but long term we want to increase the ownership in Celtic and eventually have the fans owning the club.
And I'll tell you, Martin, I think the concept of Celtic shared was something I was really happy to see. Because Armani, I'm not going to speak for you, but I think, you know, an organisation like the Green Brigade probably very much aligned with our views in terms of holding the club to account, like that incredible charitable social work that it does. And Celtic is a club with a fan base that is incredibly active, incredibly socially conscious, and it does have a large rebellious, I guess, part of it. But I don't know what about you, but it seems that there's been a very, even while we, like a group like Green Brigade, while we would support them, they're also seen as divisive. The Celtic Trust, by many, you know, seen as divisive. I think there seems to be no unity in the Celtic support in terms of what Martin said about gathering fans into a collective. What's your kind of take on where kind of fan organization in the Celtic are and what needs to happen? Is it something like Celtic Shared?
I think Celtic Shared, I'm assuming that's why it exists, to try and do that, to try and harmonize the support. And, you know, Martin said it's in its infancy. 10 months old is nothing. You know, Joe's talked earlier on, a 13-year undertaking to get where the Liverpool support are just now. So 10 months is nothing. And I think it shows a good understanding of that issue, of the fact that the broader support needs to be brought together, that Celtic Shared even exists. And then in terms of, Martin touched on that, said the word education, and I think that's key as well. And I think when you make it clear what the aims and direction are, it really helps too. I mean, you can kind of sum it up in questions, and scribbled them down while Joe and Martin were talking. What do you do? What do you stand for? What do you want? And then if people join at that stage, how can we get it? You know, it's things like that. And what I've always thought in my head is see if you got every issue and put it in, it would be too big, it would be too messy, and it would be difficult. But much similar to some of the motions in the supporters group, you know, that you'd sent in from Liverpool that Joe was talking about, there's key issues that everybody or the vast majority or the people that you want can get behind. I mean, ticket prices, tickets, Martin, it's been since I had kids, I don't go to away games very much anymore, but away games and allocations of tickets, you'll know that that's a massive thing. Probably
don't
a massive thing.
Don't get me started on that now, mate. Don't get me started.
I thought if I let the touch paper with that one, that'd be a bad thing. But things that we would, and then you've got like social values and stuff like that. I mean, the club don't pay a living wage, I can't remember, there was some discussion about it, but you know, an actual living wage is something that I think as a supporters group I'd want them to get behind. The issue with furlough last season, Joe, you said that about Liverpool, that was the same. Some of these social issues, I'm not going to rhyme them off, I can't think of them, but there'll be big ticket issues, to borrow your phrase, that I think people can get behind. And again, that'll take time. And it will develop, but I think if you put those things out there, what is it we're looking to do, who we're looking to represent and what we want, I think more and more people will get behind that. And you know, I won't go into it as well, but I think we talked about it, you know, a wee bit on the WhatsApp about supporters owning the club. Some people very much do need educated around that, because there is a common perception that that'll be me, you and Christian Martin sitting about deciding who we're going to sign and what we're going to spend, and that's obviously not the way it works. But if people don't understand it, they'll make assumptions. And the last thing I'll do, because I start rambling and I'll go on, is Joe, you'd mentioned about Liverpool selling stuff off the back of the club's values. Celtic are very guilty of that as well, and that's fine if you hold them dear and you continue to affuse them, but you know, Celtic don't always do that, and that's something that that really, really irks me, and it's something obviously that could be built into this in terms of what the ethos is of the support, the values and things like that going forward. I don't even know what the original question was there, Christian, but
I'll give you
I was just really to pick up on the original point and from about it's under absolutely no illusions that the Green Brigade particularly are divisive. You know, the style of the Green Brigade and the style of the support and, you know, the nature of what they do, they're never going to please everybody. They're never going to please everybody. And in fact, they will divide the support and a lot of issues. Again, it's just the nature of the group and the nature of the support that they lend. The Celtic Trust, again, I know we can sort of debate in terms of personnel, but the trust is the people. You know, if somebody wanted to join the trust, they're entitled to that vote and immediately can shape the leadership of the trust. So for me, the trust, I don't see the trust as the sort of personnel in the trust. I see the trust as the vehicle. And if you don't like the person driving the vehicle or the people driving that vehicle, then absolutely fine. You know, vote against them. And that's where I think there's a difference between the Green Brigade and the trust and why I would still, you know, despite if you've no like decisions taken or whatever, I would still encourage people to join it and try and, you know, shape the change that they want it to be. Because right now it is absolutely unquestionably the only sort of viable vehicle now for fans to have a proper say in the club, and we'll work with them to try and push that.
So Marnie, I think you, me and Martin all kind of want this version of Celtic Shared, that spirit of Shankly has turned into, where you have something that kind of harnesses all this incredible work, bring all these kind of groups together, be it, you know, the fan groups inside the stadium, the trust, different CSCs. You know, you're always talking there about Cop Out. Celtic's got Proud Huddle, they've got a Celtic Disabled Supporters Association, fan media like ourselves, to everybody bring all the groups together to kind of work towards at least a few clear aims and have something the support can get behind. Now that sounds wonderful and it's very easy to say it, but you know, even as a union rep, how do you get a group of people, often with very different views and different backgrounds, even if they're from in and around the same city, a lot of them, come together and kind of pull that money and influence collectively?
How do you do it?
Yeah, and just in a few words, you know. Easy solution if you have one. Where do you start, I guess?
Well, I mean, there's two issues at hand, right? I mean, there's two ways to look at it, I would say, is you need to look upon, do you reflect the support or do you lead the support? You know, and I think that a combination of both is good. I mean, a group like Celtic Shared should reflect some of the issues that come from the support. We've already touched on some of them, you know, tickets, various other things. But there's also issues, I think, that, you know, at times that you should lead, you should highlight, and then you can garner that support coming up. So I suppose in terms of gathering everything together, there will be issues that are there, and they're the building blocks of how you take things forward. But then there's got to be other things that, you know, the Dennis O'Brien stuff, you know, with the situation where he's building sites and things like that. There's publications, there's publicity that's come from that. And that's almost like leading that strong awareness to that. You know, a lot of the time that wouldn't have come up from the broad support. But if you draw attention to that, and I know that's, you know, just one issue, but it's things like that where you take the building blocks from the ground up, but then other issues that come up, you can try and drive it forward from there. So how you do that is you build a broad consensus, I think, and then from there on in, any other issues, you know, you can lead, and obviously within those structures, you can obviously debate democratically about how you take them forward. But I think that's the key thing, because if you don't have those key building blocks, it's difficult to get it going, you know. And I think, I mean, you're not going to please everybody, because there's guys that, you know, will have a season ticket and they'll just go to the game and they're absolutely happy and they don't care and they're not really interested in how the club allocate away tickets and things like that. But, you know, you're appealing to a certain demographic of the fans, you know, people that want to be active, want to have a voice in terms of taking their club forward. So it's about concentrating those people who are going to be active. So it's not easy. It's about having a finger on the pulse to an extent about what you should be doing, what you can raise, and combining them together, I think.
Talking about that influence, Martin, I think there is some ground of optimism, especially with Celtic Shared right now, because over the last few months, you know, with the potential appointment of Bernard Higgins, I think that's the first time we've seen Celtic Shared publicly really kick into action, bringing all, not just, you know, Green Brigade, the Trust, the boys and everything together there, but also having loads of fan media sign up to the statement, having loads of CSC. And once you put the statement out, I think you got a few hundred CSCs kind of adding up to that as well. So I think there's like some signs there that something like Celtic Shared, if you can have, I guess it kind of comes back for me, the discussion of, okay, how do you define a Celtic supporter in relation to the supporters board? And for me, it's having an organization, maybe like Celtic Shared, you can be a direct member of, but you can also kind of be an affiliate member of that through the Proud Huddle, through the disability, or towards a fan group and so on. So it's just the start of something. We hope it's the start of something, Martin, but it's that's the kind of, you talked about your medium-term goals there. That's what's going to get this ball rolling, the Bernard Higgins.
Bernard Higgins was undoubtedly the first real sort of big success Celtic Shared. And I'll come back on that, because that was the most recent thing. I mean, we did initially start off what feels like a million years ago now with the sort of shares for value thing, which kind of put Celtic Shared on the map initially. It was ultimately unsuccessful, and I don't think that in our heart of hearts we really did expect it to be successful. However, what that did was actually kickstart that whole education piece about why do we want shares? Why is it important that Celtic fans have shares? And people started talking about that. People in, you know, my bus for the likes who'd never even thought about it were asking me. And I was then able to address them and like blow smoke up Mars, because I don't know everything about it either. But at the same time, I was able to kind of speak to them about the importance of having fan power. So that immediately, like I say, as much as it was ultimately unsuccessful, it put Celtic Shared on the map in terms of, it was a topic of conversation at the time for a number of weeks, probably months actually. We then rolled into the summer and we were a part of the announcement of the sort of tongue-in-cheek January review, which was a play obviously on last year's January review, and the announcement of a boycott, which we partook in along with other fan groups. Again, ultimately, it's quite clear there's probably no an appetite for that now, which is fine. And I'd imagine that when this inverted comma January review comes out, I'd imagine that that will be dropped, although that's still to be discussed. But you're right, Bernard Higgins was the first main biggest success. And I think what we'll now do is kind of walk back the way, and probably should already have done it actually, is make comms where a lot of the CSCs who signed up and say, listen, you know, why don't we come under this umbrella now? And, you know, instead of us reaching out to you, we can all be in this sort of one group and address these issues kind of head on. Hopefully we'll not have an issue that's as big as the Bernard Higgins one for a while. It probably will, let's be honest. But hopefully we don't. But like I say, that you're right, that was the start. And you're right also to touch on just one other thing before Chris comes in. It's where it can get murky, and maybe Joe can help us, because I know that the Liverpool fan base, there is lots of similarities with the Celtic fan base. And you kind of mentioned it, Christian, in terms of how do you define a Celtic fan? And this is where I've kind of hit a grey area, and I'd like to kind of get the Liverpool steer on this. Is it somebody who goes home and away? Is it a Celtic season ticket holder? Is it a fan who dips in and out of Celtic games but will watch them for their you know, couch every single week at the edge of their seat? Is it somebody on Twitter who says they're a Celtic fan and, you know, contribute to the odd Celtic post and has got a tricolour on their profile picture? How do you define a Celtic fan? And how did you work around that, Joe, in terms of, I know you want to come in, Chris, so you know, feel free to come in before this goes to Joe, but how did you work that in terms of, Liverpool's obviously a massive club in the town and the community, but how did you reach out to, you know, maybe those who weren't there from Liverpool, who maybe didn't go to games, and how are they represented? But I know Chris is what you come in first.
Sorry, no, it's far more interesting to hear from Joe. All I was going to say was that the Bernard Higgins stuff was a great example of the Celtic shared leading that issue to the fans, because that didn't come, that came from a certain subsection of the support. But I think by the end, I think the vast majority of the support were totally invested in that issue. So I'll leave it at that.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, really important points there, Martin, and reflect on some of the stuff that Chris has said as well. How do we represent everyone? I generally don't think I can. I think as you said, we're a global, like Celtic are, we're a global fan base. There will be a huge diversity of views. There will be, you know, Scouse exiles in Australia who are burning Scouse all the way through, but they're Australian fans as well. They've never been to Liverpool, you know. And I think each of them has a voice, to be honest with you. It's how you galvanise that. And I think this, again, this is probably experience. You know, if we were having this conversation when we were 10 months old, I'm not sure we could have answered it. But I think some of the answer that we have now, sort of 13 years on, is about building on what Chris has said, which is that reflect the support, but actually we lead the support as well. They look to us to provide that level of leadership. And that's what's really important. And I think one of the biggest changes that we saw in Anfield when we were having the discussions with them, I realised that actually the people who were in the room and on the call at the same time didn't really understand what Spirit of Shankly was, did, or represented. And we pulled together a presentation for them, which we, you know, gave to them the sort of week after. And you could see they were blown away. They actually understood that what we can achieve and do achieve as volunteers, but actually by providing that right level of leadership for the vast majority of fans and focusing on the 90% who get behind and not the 10% who challenge, really. Because the 10% are always going to be there to challenge. They're always going to be moaning about the away ticket allocation. They're always going to be moaning about whether season ticket holders should have priority over members in cups and everything else. They will always be there. And I think it's about how you work through that. Think of any workplace. You know, back in the day, most places were wholly unionized. And, you know, obviously that's been broken down over time. But even when they were unionized in a lot of ways, people didn't want to get involved in it. Still didn't necessarily see unions as representing their views, but actually always got the benefits from it as well. They got the pay award, they got the maternity leave, they got the sick pay, etc. And I think that's where we see ourselves, really, is to try and get the best for the majority. that everyone can get see advantage of. And there will always be nuance, and there will always be something that needs to reflect where they are. But we can do that with confidence, really. I think that's the bit now, is that that's where we are 13 years on, because we can look to other things that we've done over that time that says, certainly got some things wrong, but we got most of the calls right. And actually, most of the fans have actually benefited from that at some point. And I think the other thing that I would say is that it's about not representing yourself at all. You know, one of the big issues for me, really personally, is that I used to love going to game, because I used to just be that fella who walked up to Anfield and looked forward to which team was on the pitch, and then just, you know, got on with the 90 minutes. It's kind of not like that now, because you're behind the magic show. You know what goes on behind the scenes, and you're actually aware of everything that's going on around you in that way. But that's equally important as well. That's an honour. You know, as much as sometimes I'm cheesed off by that, actually, you know, to be in the position I am, to represent, you know, the best fans in the world, sorry, folks, and the best team, you know, it's incredibly powerful and humbling, to be honest with you. So, you know, I will always do my best to make sure that I can, you know, I'm actually going to use it, you know, to Chris's, to reflect the support, but also lead the support as well. But I think some of that comes with experience. Some of that comes with the level of experience that we've got with the club locally and nationally as well. But I'm sure you'll get there, because I'm pretty sure that even if there are a number of various groups within the Celtic fan base, I bet you the main principles will be exactly the same. It's just how we achieve them, and that's where we are with, you know, with 90, Spion Cop 1906, who are very much like the Blues in terms of their focus on making sure that the atmosphere is great, making sure that the banners are done, making sure that more kids are getting to home and away games. 100%. Like, we want that as well. It's just different ways of getting it.
I think, sort of just quietly, I think Celtic Shield, and probably to a larger extent the likes of this Trust, have probably been victims of, and I say that I sort of loathe to say this, but probably been victims of the unprecedented success that Celtic have had in terms of the last 20-odd years. I mean, since 2000, we've pretty much ran the show, albeit from last year, and most successful trusts and protest groups and such like are born out of crisis. And thankfully, we've not actually had an absolute shitter last year. But generally speaking, we've not had, you know, crisis. And I think that has probably been to the detriment of, you know, the growth of some of these groups. Now, that is no, again, I'd stress that, you know, all I want to see is success. You know, that's absolutely not the case. But equally, I think fans can sometimes be blinded by the continuous stream of silverware that we've had, and maybe sort of look the other way at, you know, some glaring issues that are kind of staring them right in the face otherwise.
And I'm going to try and slowly round this up as well. I think we could be here all night. Maybe we should just be here all night afterwards. But so, Randy, we talked about, you know, I think it is important that Celtic Shared kind of keep rolling. Maybe, as you said, Martin, turn into something you can be a direct member of. It's elected, it's representative, there's democratic levers, if you want to use that kind of term. But Samani, like, Bernard Higgins was something that in the end the supporters could come around together. Supporters Party Liverpool got this consent level of engagement where they will have to give their consent for Liverpool to do certain fundamental things to the club. And I guess this is what, I guess, a rallying cry, Samani, in terms of you need one or two, three points where everybody can come together as a support. And from that, you will then, if you have another success and another success, that's when you can almost organically, it creates something like the spirit of Shankly and hopefully what Celtic Shared is going to be. Can you kind of see what those two, three points would be? Or do you think they'll just come organically?
I'm going to go back to the point Joe made. It's important not to represent yourself, you know. So I could give you a shopping list. Martin could give you a shopping list, you know. And you know, we've touched on some of them. But organically, they should come to the fore. You know, I mean, we could probably think of some of them. You know, it's different. I suppose it's slightly different. Obviously, the EPL is different from the SPFL. SPFL is obviously better, we know. But it's in terms of if we put in, you need to seek fan consent to move to a different league. You know, if it was the European Super League, Joe, you know, I imagine the vast majority of the Liverpool fans would be dead against it. See if they offered Celtic a place in the EPL. Do you know what I mean? So is that something that you would put in there? So there are differences between the two clubs, you know, financially and in terms of the league they're in. But yeah, that, you know, it's about getting those things. And I mean, I don't know. I can't even think of one off the top of my head just now. But what you need to do is you need to make sure that you don't put absolutely everything. If you're going to do it for the consent, you know, the engage and consult categories, you know, it's so tempting just to load the first one up, but it becomes completely unrealistic and, you know, and then it ends up becoming really messy in terms of getting it around. But there's going to be common themes that go through all of those things, isn't there?
EPL one was the one that immediately sprung to my mind as well, mate, to be honest. Yeah. And right now, again, we're at I'm 100% against it. I think more and more fans, again, no offence to Joe, but I think with the commercialisation and everything that's happening in England, I think more and more Celtic fans are actually against it now than maybe what they were 10 or so years ago. However, the decision to go to England should be down to the fans, if that opportunity did arise. Yeah. That should be down to the fans. It shouldn't be down to, you know, Uncle Dermot and whether he could make a quick buck off his shares or whatever, anything like that. It should be down to the fans and in the hands of the fans. And right now, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of that, I mean, I would agree with you, Martin. I mean, I think football in general needs a far greater redistribution of wealth because it's far too concentrated in certain places. But anyway, but yeah, I think you're right. I think stuff like that really should come down to the fans and stuff like that. You know, regardless of the different scenarios that both football clubs are in, I think they're both key. You know, whether or not that they would be different, but. You know, you might want to speculate on them, Christian. You might want to, Martin. I've been put in the spot what some of these issues would be, yeah. But I think that, you know, it is key. And I think those would be the building blocks about that question I said earlier on. What do you do? What do you stand for? What do you want? You know, and I think that's how you try and build it forward, you know.
And I guess as we saw, Samani, with Bernard Higgins was something we couldn't have predicted a few months down the line. That happened organically. And I guess it comes back to what you said, Martin, about Celtic share becoming a democratic organization. If you have the most democratic functions, you know, everybody who wants to be a member and puts into it can, you know, can come up with these points and agree on those points.
It's an absolute it's an absolute must. The democratic thing's an absolute must because we don't have it in place. We don't have any kind of credibility as a movement or as a group. So it's something that will be imminent. And actually, the Bernard Higgins stuff should be, all things going to plan, should be the springboard to putting those these structures in place.
So I want to end with one end point for each of you, and for Joe, for you, I spoke to a few cynic about this podcast, and one point that was made to me was that I think this is very much applies to Liverpool and the situation and the position you have in global football, is that it's so important that capitalism is restrained when it comes to football, and that football clubs operate first and foremost as a kind of like an island of community for the people involved in it. So, Spirit of Shankar, you've got a very exciting development here. But if your model is not replicated in teams all over the world, and especially maybe within the top six in England, there's a very plausible scenario here that will move to like an NFL system in no time. You know, this one major league across the world represents the whole sport. You can move the clubs as cities, you know, move clubs between cities as franchises. What's your kind of thoughts on that? And are you kind of, you talked about how you're in touch with other supporters club, especially in England, because what Spirit of Shankland's managed to do, hopefully is one brick in the wall to kind of stop that tsunami of hyper-capitalism. How do you kind of see that future? Because however much power you get at Liverpool, unless that power is replicated across big clubs globally, it seems inevitable this is just going to go one way.
Mm. think you're right. Yeah, I think that's a huge challenge for us all in football. And you know, there's something within the conversation Martin just had there in terms of you know, if you got offered the chance of going to a European Super League, would you go? There's part of me that also thinks that if a European Super League does happen, I want Liverpool to be on that train. Kind of don't want to hold us back to the point that just because we're so strongly valued that, you know, as a club, we said, well, we'll stay home and we'll go into League Two or whatever else it would be, simply because we've got, you know, our pride and won't let us do. What we said to the club was that don't try and level up, to use the national language, to Man City, to PSG, to Barcelona. Get them to level down. Get them to see that the right way of doing it is through FIFA, through the FA, through the Premier League, through UEFA, to actually nail down the capitalist approach that football isn't for monetizing. Football isn't an NBA. Football is actually about, you know, the four people on here and you know, the hundreds and thousands that hopefully will be listening to the podcast who actually 100% believe in the working class game that we support. And we've got to get that message across. We do that through fan groups, but equally we've got to get that into the psyche of some of the football clubs as well, into the ownership. So it's not just seen as something that can just be picked up and thrown away, because I think one key point that one of you mentioned was about the community asset that we have. You lose Celtic out of Glasgow and it just rips the city apart. Now, I know you've got Rangers, etc., but, you know, just if you're a one club town, you know, the heart of the town goes as well. So football's got a responsibility for the social aspect. But, you know, if Liverpool move out of Anfield and move somewhere else or play games somewhere else, the whole of that area is devastated. Jobs are lost, livelihoods are lost, families are ripped apart, everything else, all the social ills that, you know, we strive to manage will happen. So I think you're right. We've got to stop nationally and collectively and through solidarity the rise of the capitalists, you know, approach, really, in terms of doing it, recognizing it's here. We know there is, you know, we know the sponsorship, we know the television, but let's do it in the right way. And I think that's the key to it.
Martin, for yourself, and kind of next steps for Celtic Shared, you outlined some of the goals.
I mean, for next steps, yeah, for us, you know, I think certainly internally, we've got to sort out the structure of Celtic Shared for the reasons that I've discussed upon. I'd like to see us work towards consolidating the kind of missing shares that are out there now. It's not going to, you know, yield sort of fan ownership or anything like that, but there's about 20% of shares which are missing, unaccounted for, don't get used, that are, you know, certificates up in walls and stuff like that. If we can get them consolidated, then we have power within the club. We're not going to get all 20%, but even if we can get to 5%, we have the ability to call a general meeting at Celtic and automatically have power. If we can get 5, then can we get 10? We can get 10, we get 15, and build it that way. So for me, a big part of it is starting off with the education piece around the support, and then seeing if we can consolidate some of those missing shares and try to start to have real sort of influence inside the club. That's a sort of medium term, short term. It's to continue to improve the engagement between the club and its fans. I say improve, actually just introduce some engagement would be good, between the club and the fans, so that we can actually have a say on sort of fan issues. We don't want to be sitting stamping on our feet, you know, thinking, saying Anne should sign this guy, Anne should sign that guy, but, you know, issues that matter to the clubs, to the fans, that is, like the appointment of a guy who's shafted hundreds at his, you know, ticket allocations, so on and so forth. So we want to influence and consult with them, and not just be told this is what's happening and this is why.
So, Manny, you know, even within the cynic, there's a wide range of opinions on fan engagement, consultations, to speak of the whole Celtic support. But we've talked so much over the last year, especially about how the fans come together and collectively try to influence the club in any way. I haven't heard Joe speak today. I heard Martin speak today. Again, a very unreasonable question for myself to you, but how do you see this going, and how do, would you, what's your hopes, I guess, for the future?
My hopes is, you know, we get to a level of engagement like that. I mean, and it's that voice that's taken seriously. And the reason it's taken seriously is because they have to take it seriously because of pressure that's been built up. I mean, how can it go? You can't tell. But just hearing Martin talk tonight in terms of the aims and you know, what they're introducing, and the Bernard Higgins situation as well, I mean, I don't think we can underestimate that, because I knew who he was and I'd heard about him, and a lot of us in the podcast would, but vast swathes of the support, I don't think did. And then I think a lot of that changed very quickly with the publicity. So how do I see it going? I'm hopeful that it will build and it will continue going forward. Issues will become prominent. When you see a group like that getting wins, and that was a win, that builds the legitimacy, that builds that, you know, the buy-in for it. So, you know, I think, you know, in the stuff that Martin's talked about tonight, it all seems very sensible and it seems as if it's going in the right direction. So I'm really hopeful that it will continue to build and go forward.
Just very quickly, what I'd want to add as well is I want to make sure that we are in a position so that when the next issue comes around, which, like I said earlier, it's never too far away, we're no having to firefight. We're in a position as a strong, democratic, credible group where we can tackle that head on the way we did with Higgins, but probably even stronger. And I don't want to have to react to, you know, crisis. I don't want to have to react to, you know, the next immoral appointment. I want to kind of keep working away and be proactive. And that comes with, like I say, building it from where we are now.
I think just before you come back in, Christian, I think one point for consent would have to be no managerial appointments in the showers. I think we would need to build that into anything that goes forward.
You have to be fully dressed to get offered to. Joe, again, thank you so much for coming on. For me, it's been really inspirational to hear you talk about how far you come, and it's and again, I guess, you know, thank you for all your work on behalf of, you know, the Liverpool fans, and hopefully some of what you've managed to create over the last 13 years we can start replicating up here soon as well.
That's been on. Thanks for inviting me, and I've actually learned a lot as well in terms of the reflection, and I think one of the words you just said there was about, you know, being inspired. Listening to what, you know, Martin's trying to do now inspires me again to take us to another level. So, I mean, I think it, you know, I've certainly got a lot out of it myself. Thank you. So thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Martin, same with you. Thanks for coming on. Great to have you on again. I hope this is a debate we'll be having throughout 2022 and beyond, especially with yourself.
Absolutely. I appreciate it for the invite, mate. I enjoyed it. Thank you. Thanks to Joe as well. That was a great insight. I've admired you guys from afar, so it was a pleasure to meet you.
Christopher Samani, one of the people. Thank you for coming on.
No, I enjoyed that. It's good to see what Joe and Liverpool fans have done, and it's great to see that we've got Celtic supporters that are looking to replicate that, you know, Martin involved in that. So I've learned a lot about both, and I enjoyed it tonight. So thanks for inviting me on, Christian.
Absolutely. And again, thank you for coming on. Thank you, everybody, for listening as well. We went a bit over what we thought, but hopefully you enjoyed it. And hopefully it's interesting. Hopefully it can kind of inspire you as well to get involved in some part of Celtic's fan organization. We talked a lot about these things on The Cynic, talk a bit about football as well, and what we cover on daily podcasts. If you want to find out more, go to thecynic.co. No UK in that address, thecynic.co, and have a look around. But other than that, I've been Christian Wolf, and thank you for listening to this very special podcast.